Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The affordable housing crisis in the Bay Area is once again hitting artists hard, especially those in San Francisco. In September, the San Francisco Arts Commission surveyed almost 600 artists, writers, actors, and filmmakers. A whopping 70% said they've been or were being displaced from their studio space, their home, or both. Presida Eyes, a community arts muralist organization, has been in San Francisco's Mission District since 1977. But unless it's able to raise a $200,000 down payment, the muralists may lose their longtime home. San Francisco's Dance Mission has faced displacement threats. This time around, the decades-old feminist and multicultural dance theater has been hit by an annual rent increase of $44,000. Last June, Studio 17's lease expired despite attempts to renegotiate terms with the landlord. 73 working artists lost their studio space. Also last year, Oakland's Rock, Paper, Scissors Collective received a notice from its landlord of a more than triple rent increase. Known as RPS, it was one of the original members of Art Murmur, whose open studios began drawing thousands into the city every first Friday of the month. Essentially putting Oakland's arts and cultural scene on the map, RPS has since moved out of the space it called home for more than 11 years. It's an all too familiar story. Artists who create culturally vibrant communities are being priced out yet again. And we have been here before. If you lived in the Bay Area in the mid to late 90s, you've seen this. So what have we learned? What have city governments learned? What have arts organizations learned? Joining me to talk about this is Moy Eng. She's executive director of the Community Arts Stabilization Trust, also known as CAST. They purchase and lease space for the exclusive use of nonprofit arts organizations. Prior to CAST, Moy directed the arts program at the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, investing in efforts that helped bring $800 million in new public sector funding for arts education to California schools. She also supported efforts to build more than 750,000 square feet in new affordable performing arts spaces across the San Francisco Bay region. And Moy joins me in studio. Hi, Moy. Thank you for coming in.
Hi. And thank you for inviting us to be part of this conversation.
Well, it's great to have you. We're also joined by Hiroko Kurihara, a textile artist who has lived in Oakland for 17 years. 6 years ago, Hiroko launched the 25th Street Collective, a sustainable sewn goods incubator in Uptown Oakland. In 2012, she co-founded Oakland Makers, an organization that supports artisans and educators with a mission to grow a diverse creative economy. Hiroko has also been working with Oakland Mayor's Task Force for Affordability for Artisans. And Hiroko joins us on the line from Oakland. Hi, Hiroko. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for doing the show and putting a spotlight on what's happening here.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, we've done so many shows about the arts over the years, but I have to say this latest study out from the San Francisco Arts Commission is pretty dire. Again, they surveyed 600 artists, writers, actors, filmmakers, and a whopping 70% said that they have already been or were being displaced from their studio space, their home, or both. So many of these artists have either gone to the East Bay, which, as you know, Hiroko, is driving up rents there, but a lot of these artists have left the Bay Area altogether. What are your thoughts on this study?
Well, I know that being a member of the Mayor's Task Force, we looked at the San Francisco survey as a basis for surveys at our working group of the artists subcommittee. put out to our networks, and within 2 weeks, we had a response from 937 artists in Oakland. And we're just now delving into how we can not only do some more analysis on the data itself, but really connect with people who have taken the survey. It's absolutely affecting our areas. The collective that I was operating on 25th Street received notice for a 40% increase. There are others in the immediate area also receiving increases of up to 60%. So it's happening. What's happening in San Francisco is now absolutely going to happen in Oakland and has been happening. And I think that, you know, I feel that we have this window of opportunity to have an impact on the policies that are coming into being in Oakland now.
We'll talk about that later in the show, but I just wonder, living in Oakland, what changes have you seen and felt as a result of a lot of San Francisco artists moving to Oakland?
Well, you know, I think that there's a general sentiment of wanting to be open and to grow the arts community for certain. What's difficult is when, you know, we're seeing that it's impacting our ability to pay rent for our housing as well as our workspaces.
And Moy, what are your thoughts on these studies? Again, the San Francisco study found that 70% of 600 artists are being displaced. And then Oakland conducted a survey of 900 artists. And again, the majority there said workspace and housing costs present the biggest challenge to being an artist in Oakland.
I think that I would only echo what Hiroko has already commented on, both from a person who has been here since the early part of the 2000s. So this is my seeing the second wave of this again. This is not a new phenomenon, but another wave of displacement, of possible and erosion of culture and economic drivers as we see the arts and culture in our cities. So what these two studies and others, there's the 2014 City and County of San Francisco Board of Supervisors Policy Analysis Report, a recent 2012 Nonprofit Finance Fund National Survey, as well as private real estate firms like Cushman and Wakefield that look at, so what's going on with, you know, vacancy rates and how much are rents going. So what this is doing through the arts and culture lens is underscoring what is unfolding for our artists and our arts organizations.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the fact that this is your second round, because I remember the 90s boom and bust, and we were seeing the same thing back then. And I just wonder, what have city governments learned from this? What have arts organizations learned from this?
I think it's a great question, and I'm hoping as we get callers that people who have been here not only for a short time, for a long time, 20 years plus, can really comment on and provide a historical perspective. Hiroko, do you have any? I'm just wondering, Hiroko's been here for a long time.
Right.
I wonder if she has a comment.
Yeah, I mean, I do remember when Oakland had a public arts commission. You know, we don't even have that infrastructure in place anymore. It's one of our. Hang on just a second. Sorry. I'm calling from my home studio right now. But, you know, one of our strategies that we're recommending to the mayor is that we absolutely need a cultural arts manager and have to reinstate the commission.
And, Hiroko, why is there no arts commission in Oakland?
We have just an immediate, I think it's two things. You know, we have been in deficit for a long time, and we're also, you know, maybe looking at needing to change the leadership sort of priorities to maybe restructure where the cultural arts manager is placed in the organizational chart of the city.
Well, I would like to give out the phone number, because I'm sure a lot of you listening are artists. You work for arts organizations. Maybe you work for the city. If you just care about the arts and you're seeing changes in your community, we'd love to hear from you. If you were around during the 90s boom and bust, what do you remember about that? And what lessons can we take from that time and apply them to what we're facing today? What solutions do you see? What can we do to ensure that, you know, what we have left, the amazing artists that we have left, are not forced to leave the Bay Area? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So Moy, you have an interesting background because you have worked for the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, which has a lot of money. When you were there, you helped invest in efforts that helped bring $800 million in new public sector funding for arts education to California schools. You also worked on an effort to build affordable performing arts spaces. And now you're working with the Community Arts Stabilization Trust. So help us understand what role these different groups play in preserving the arts, whether it's the city, major foundations that have a lot of money, arts organizations that have a lot of money, or arts organizations that kind of hope that they can get enough money from year to year.
I think maybe we should start from that I think you suggest two things.
Okay.
One is that it takes a community, a multifaceted community, to value and recognize how important arts and culture are in our cities and in the places that we live. That's one. Two, in order for that value to be built on, then people have to be moved to action, whether they are a foundation official, a government staffer who can have some say in affecting policies and regulations, as well as individual donors to artists and arts organizations. So I think we all have to play a specific role in, and I'll quote a colleague of mine, Roberto Bedoya, in creative placekeeping as well as creative placemaking. And what CAS does essentially is to help create affordable space, workspace for artists and arts organizations, and our focus has been in San Francisco, and we are now looking at exploratory efforts and going in and expanding our work to Oakland. So our focus is really about creating physical space so that artists and arts organizations have a place to work, have a place to rehearse, and have a place to move us.
Yeah, and that's so important. I mean, at a time when I just saw a one bedroom in my neighborhood going for $4,500 a month.
You just made me tear up.
I mean, it's
not
just,
in a good way.
Right. And so this is now kind of the norm. Who knows how long it'll last, but what is that process like for you?
I just wanted to add too that on 23rd Street by Broadway in Oakland, there are two bedroom apartments going for $4,500 a month, right in the arts district.
So, I mean, right now you're up against developers. I mean, you drive across the Bay Bridge, and it's unbelievable to see the new buildings in San Francisco. So how do you go about trying to get affordable space for artists?
So it's a combination of things. One is that you have to have leadership that believes in the value of the arts.
And
in
the case, are you talking about city government leaders?
I'm talking about public and private sector leaders that come together. And in the case, that's what led to CAST, in seeing what is unfolding, the next economic surge, what the potential impacts, both short-term and long-term, were for artists and arts organizations, much less for the not-for-profit sector, who really benefit from quasi-pro bono and pro bono spaces. And we need space. I mean, that's the long, the short of it, in which to work, much less to live. And so that's first. And so I think that it's not only foundations, government, city agencies, such as the Arts Commission, Grants for the Arts, the Office of Economic and Workforce Development, the Department of Housing, the Mayor's Office. It takes a great deal of a number of public and private sector leaders to come together and recognize there's a problem. What do we do about it? Who do we need at the table to not only talk about the top-down approaches, so policies and regs, the strategies in the middle to make more space on the ground, as well as tactically, how do we best serve our artists and arts organizations in a way that is real, meaningful, and support a diverse cultural activity? And so I think it takes a great deal of people, not just one or two people. So did I answer your question?
No, you did. I just think it's interesting to learn more about how the process works.
So for CAST, we began with a number of public and private sector leaders that believed and recognized this was a problem and thought then and think now, there is a long-term solution. Is there? And that's what CAST represents, not only short-term, but a long-term solution to preserving and creating affordable space for arts and culture. Secondly, it took cash is king, money.
Right.
Thank you, Kenneth Rainin Foundation. They made an extraordinary $5 million five-year grant to help us purchase two buildings. And as a number of our listeners know, one of the buildings is at 80 Turk and will become the future home of the wonderful Contemporary Arts Center, Counterpulse. The second building has been the longtime home of the esteemed and preeminent visual arts center, Luggage Store Gallery. And what we were able to do was purchase both buildings. They are now under construction and finishing it. They will have below market rate leases for the next 7 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the period, they will have had each organization have had an opportunity to work in their building that was constructed and renovated for them. And they could purchase their home for the cost that we purchased it in 2015.
Hmm. Hiroko, is there anything like that happening in Oakland or in the East Bay that you know of?
You know, there's a big effort happening now with, I don't know how many articles there have been in the San Francisco Business Journal around development happening in Oakland.
Right.
But we have this, you know, pipeline of thousands of units coming into downtown concurrently with a new downtown specific plan. And so it really is absolutely now is the time, and I can provide more specifics because there's yet another opportunity for community input coming up in February on the 1st. And that whole process of trying to bring everyone to the table and not just sort of a top-down or organizational level type of involvement, I think is really critical to try to remain or try to retain a culturally diverse and equitable voice and approach to how we build our city. But so when we're looking at alternatives for ground floor spaces, I know that there could be, for example, zoning changes that say, you know, let's really look at how we can not consistently require retail specifically on ground floor spaces, but really move towards a cultural arts use. And more recently, there have been developers that are looking into, based on the recommendations from the mayor's task force, in looking at a CAST model. It's specifically stated there as something that we could achieve, and even from a community land trust model, there are ways to partner with nonprofits. It's a matter of being able to advocate and be there and provide the information because it's not a standard process.
Well, that's really good information, and you're so right about the development boom in Oakland. The San Francisco Business Times, right? You mentioned that paper?
Yes.
Yeah, if you want to follow what's happening in terms of development, that paper is a go-to. It's amazing to look at their website every day because they follow this very closely. And that is Hiroko Kurihara. She's a textile artist who has lived in Oakland for 17 years. Moy N is executive director of the Community Arts Stabilization Trust. They purchase and lease space for the exclusive use of nonprofit arts organizations. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Hector. He is the artistic director with, it looks like, Opera Cultura. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with him?
Hi, Hector.
He says that the impact on artists is not limited to the North Bay. Artists and arts organizations, particularly those that serve communities of color that live and work in the South Bay, are also feeling the impact of rent increases. Yes, thank you so much for bringing that up, Hector. And if you live in the South Bay, we'd love to hear from you. Because San Francisco and the East Bay tend to get most of the attention, but the South Bay is also getting hit really hard. So give us a call if you live there and you have thoughts about arts, what changes you're seeing. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Catherine in Oakland. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. So I'm an organizer with Arts for a Better Bay Area. I know Heroku really well. I've worked with Heroku through Oakland Makers and the Task Force and Oakland Creative Neighborhoods Coalition. And the point that I want to bring to and kind of reiterate that Moy brought up was the building public will piece and really looking at advocacy for the arts and cultural preservation and supporting, as the emailer mentioned, that mostly artists of color, communities of color, typically under-resourced, underrepresented communities, are feeling the brunt and have felt the brunt of the shift in the Bay Area and further out. So project that I want to highlight is Arts for a Better Bay Area. That's an advocacy and policy education coalition that really was spearheaded by Ebony McKinney and Lex Lifebite and a large coalition of arts leaders from the ground up and representing major institutions in San Francisco. And they actually released a policy and budget recommendation to the city and county of San Francisco that was pretty successful in bringing in support from the, like I said, from the artists, arts organizations, and government leaders.
And Catherine, is it true that Bay Area, Better Bay Area encouraged Mayor Lee to dedicate $7 million to arts funding?
So what we did is we created the 2015-2016 policy and budget recommendation document, and the request was, I believe, for $10 million in an arts budget increase, and the mayor came back with a $7 million over 2 years, so like a little bit over $3 million this year and $3 million next year.
How will that money be used?
So that's what we're going to continue to work on. Most of the money has been is going through the existing programs at the San Francisco Arts Commission and Grants for the Arts. And what we're going to be working on this year at Arts for a Better Bay Area, we have an arts budget coalition, a cultural space committee, and a building public will committee. And through the arts budget committee, we're going to be acting as a watchdog for the funding. So right now we're looking at the recommendations that we gave and what's being implemented, where is the money going, and being, and then we're going to be reporting on all that information as it comes out.
And where can people find information to get involved in this?
Yeah, we have a Tumblr right now. So it's betterbayarea.tumblr.com. We're also on Facebook. It's Arts for Better Bay Area. We're very grassroots, and we're also continuing to build the network. So that would be a good place to start.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Catherine. Moy, you're familiar with this. What are your thoughts on this project?
Very much. I think that they have grown over the last 10 years since when it was a good idea and a belief in arts as a publicly supported value. And it's grown in its network and as a multi-generational advocacy building public will around arts and culture in San Francisco. And this recent accomplishment, I would say kudos to Arts for a Better Bay Area, because it's the first significant accomplishment they've had. Not that they haven't had, but in terms of monetarily, it's fantastic. So bravo to them.
Yes. Well, thank you for calling, Catherine. And you can also find more information about that at yourcallradio.org. Moy Eng is executive director of the Community Art Stabilization Trust, which purchases and leases space for the exclusive use of nonprofits. And Hiroko Kurihara is a textile artist who has lived in Oakland for 17 years. Today, we are talking about what it will take to preserve arts and culture in the Bay Area. What are your thoughts on this? What solutions do you have? And what changes are you seeing? This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, you're welcome to join the conversation by calling us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC. Amongst many things, they'll be talking about survival under the most harshest of circumstances. 11 o'clock this morning, half an hour from now, BBC World Have Your Say here on KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of California Governor Jerry Brown's State of the State address and his 2016 budget proposal. We often hear that California is in the middle of an economic boom. But what about the 9 million people who are living in poverty? Who is reporting on the social and economic issues facing marginalized communities? That is tomorrow. Today, we are talking about artists that are struggling to stay in the Bay Area. Many have left for the East Bay, driving rents up there. Many have actually left the Bay Area altogether. We're talking about this with Moy Eng, Executive Director of the Community Art Stabilization Trust, and Hiroko Kurihara, textile artist who has lived in Oakland for 17 years. And if you're an artist, if you work for an arts organization, if you work for city government, what changes are you seeing and what are the solutions to this problem? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Since Catherine brought up San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee, Moy, I wanted to ask you, Ed Lee and his administration have done so much to bring tech companies to San Francisco. There was the tax break that got so much media attention. According to reports, I don't know if he still does this, but he goes down to Silicon Valley on a weekly basis to talk to people. What has this administration done for artists?
I think that let's look historically and let's move forward. Historically, I mean, there are not too many cities that I can think of that have not just one arts agency, but two municipal arts agencies. So when you look at grants for the arts and San Francisco Arts Commission in total, just roughly what their collective budget is, it's about $35 million. So that's first and foremost to support arts organizations, individual arts, and a variety of complementary activities. So let's just start that as a foundation. For the mayor has been extraordinary, and many of the city agencies have been extraordinarily supportive of CAST in recognition of the cost of affordable space. However, I think there is a moment. Late last year, the mayor made as a charge to all of the agencies to really focus on affordable housing. While CAST is not focused on housing, and we recognize how important it is to have artists live and work in the city, our focus is workspace, perhaps there's a moment for not only the city leadership, the staffers, as well as those who care about living and working in the city that they love, to move forward on policies, regs, and additional support around housing for artists.
What change would you like to see?
Incentives from a policy standpoint, additional program exemplars, and some initial investments by whether it's the Department of Housing or OEWD, but from the city, so that it leverages private support and perhaps additional incentives for real estate developers to include for the long term as well as for the short term, supplement bringing together the vibrancy in street life, more cultural activity. And so I think it's I go back to it, and I'll perhaps be more direct. I've alluded that it takes a top-down and a bottom-up approach. And I think we have a moment because this next wave of the crisis is so loud and people are so vocal and it's so hard and the amounts are enormous. So I think that is the positive moment that we could turn something and make some positive change.
And Hiroko, what about you? You mentioned earlier that there's no arts commission in Oakland currently. Do you feel like this is a priority?
We have 2.5 staffers in the cultural arts department right now.
And do you feel like this is a priority for Oakland City government, and what changes would you like to see?
Well, you know, Mayor Libeschaff has really called on a focus on housing for certain. And, you know, again, with this task force, they are recommendations we're submitting to the mayor, but they are just recommendations. And I think it will take a lot of the grassroots participation and action in really encouraging City Council to move forward on affordability and growth of workspaces for artists. One thing I did want to mention, though, more recently, the City of Oakland did pass a cultural arts district designation to a downtown group of black businesses and arts groups. And so, you know, having a designation like this as a cultural arts district really feeds into what the state has done more recently in passing legislation that would afford benefits and incentives through tax breaks and other mechanisms to developers or property owners who are going to build in a cultural arts district, you know, and help encourage affordability and long-term retention of cultural arts in Oakland. What's challenging about that, though, is that Oakland has such a breadth of art and art making throughout all the districts in Oakland. We have, you know, a huge area where art is prevalent everywhere. And so the collective on 25th Street, where I'm located, is in the heart of where Art Murmur is located, you know, two blocks where Rock, Paper, Scissors Collective used to be. And, you know, I'm helping Christy actually store some of her stuff from Rock, Paper, Scissors Collective in my space right now as she's looking for new space. Mm. So, you know, we have more recently in what we're now calling the Uptown Arts and Historic Garage District pulled together, you know, more than 50 people from the neighborhood to really look at how do we address the changes that are happening. You know, how do we really impact the policies that are now at this very moment being decided on how developers will come in and build the city. And, you know, I heard recently, actually yesterday, there was a proposal on 23rd and Webster where the city sold some of publicly owned land to a developer for $9 million, and they're going to be buying the parking lot that they're building as a public parking lot for $14 million. They are including affordable housing, but one of the requests, I think it might have been Annie Campbell Washington, our council member here, who requested to set aside of those affordable units for teachers. So if that's something that goes through, you know, maybe that's somewhere where we could look at, can we designate specific affordable units for artists?
Well, we have an arts professor in Oakland who has lived there since the 80s who wants to talk about what she's seen. So let's go to Carla. Hi, Carla. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, Rose. Good morning, everybody. Well, I've got a unique history, I guess. I was born and raised in Oakland. And left the area, went away to school, and moved back in 1984. And I lived in what was the very active industrial belt of Oakland that was kind of no man's land. A lot of vacant buildings, very large buildings that were assimilated into artist spaces. And I had a wonderful 1,400 square foot live workspace for 15 years. I lived in shared another large space with somebody before that, but all in all, in this one particular location, I was there for 20 years and saw that first dot-com bubble happen. And just, I'm very alert to what's happening economically in the area, and I've seen Oakland change for many, many years, ups and downs, and I really, every day that I woke up and had this wonderful studio space that was in a vacant industrial building, just knew how lucky I was. I'm a sculptor, primarily, but work in lots of media, and this space really was terrific. But I was kicked out because the landlord, I think he was wink-wink under the radar of City of Oakland for many, many years, and it wasn't up to code, and it was filled with artists for years. It was such a vibrant community. And the thing that I know that downtown Oakland has changed dramatically since my childhood, dramatically. But, you know, I lived in a space that nobody in the world would want to live in for a very long time. It was toxic waste everywhere, and it was in a not-so-great neighborhood, but artists, you know, then were willing to put up with, you know, marginal neighborhoods and live in conditions. I didn't have heat for the first 8 years, and I had 35-foot ceilings. And, you know, I did have heat, but it wasn't thermostatically controlled heat. I couldn't keep it on at night. So, you know, artists, you know, were, I think still are, willing to put up with a lot in order to have the space to work at an affordable price. And once that space was put up to code, I could not afford to move back because the rent doubled. And I have been, you know, at that time, because the rents were going sky high at that first dot-com bubble, I could not find a space that was that I could afford, and had to move to a studio apartment, sell a lot of my equipment, and I have a one-car garage with no windows.
Well, Carla, thank you so much for sharing your story. We have a couple other people in Oakland who'd like to share their stories, and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Nina in Oakland. Hi, Nina. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you for calling in.
Good. I love the station.
Thanks.
I am a merchant downtown Oakland. I own a business. I'm also an artist, so I have been had the opportunity to show work or produce an installation at Rock, Paper, Scissors. I've been working downtown. I've worked for Clorox for about 9 years, another bank downtown for about 2 years. I've just seen it entirely change, and every time you blink, it changes. One of the things about Oakland has been that lowland place. I'm actually good colleague friends with Betty Marvin. Is anybody familiar with her, with the City of Oakland? She gave me a book to read. It's called How Buildings Learn, and one of the things I learned in this book by Stuart Brand is that Oakland has a lot of lowland places, and what's happening is the artists, as Carla was saying in the previous comments, was that a lot of the artists actually like those lowlands so that they can experiment and do what they need to do and test out methods and practices away from zoning codes. And so I think what's happening right now, artists are being pushed out. People are being pushed out. It's not just about the art. It's about the housing, because it's how can you make a living or how can you make art if you don't have a space?
Right.
And as a retailer, I'm down on 17th and Telegraph in the heart of everything. I've been there for about 6 years now. So before things started to really, really pick up, we opened Fillmore, downtown Oakland, and we also have artists down there. So I'm in a mixture of all of these subsets right here that we're speaking about. One of the things I see that can happen is government to get in front of things. I think Oakland has been so lax in its government policy that it's behind the gun, and we've had to rush and make some drastic changes where it's actually pushing the needs of the people to the side. And I mean the people who've been here, the people who have housing, the kids here, the diversity here around the African-American community. I know that my friends are owning businesses in the new African-American Arts District, but again, there are only a couple businesses. I'm not talking about a handful, I'm talking about a couple. So how do you, that's great to have an arts district, but if you can't have businesses there, how does that really feed into the art part of that, right? And so that goes back to policy around the tenant improvement grants. around the facade improvement grant that the state of California actually did away with. So now we have people who come in with money who can push others out, and there's no support from the city of Oakland to actually bring them in unless they're a big business, unless they're bringing bigger tax revenue.
Well, thank you for calling in, Nina, and sharing your story. And we're going to hear from Sarah in Oakland, and then we'll get responses. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So I moved to Oakland 17 years ago. I had a two-bedroom apartment on 33rd and Telegraph for $625. I now live on 38th and Shafter with my four-year-old and my husband. Our rent is $2,200, and we have just got a notice of $10,000 for us to move out of our apartment and relocate. I own a vintage store called Pretty Penny up on College Avenue. I've owned it for 10 years. So I have affordable rent on College Avenue because my landlord is amazing, but I can't afford to live here. And I'm also being offered money to leave. So if my vintage clothing store of, 10 years that I've was here before anybody else was opening businesses and, struggled to make it, during a really poor economy, now I have to choose to leave or run my business while I live out of state because I can't afford to live here. My four-year-old's going to start kindergarten next year. We have to think about where she's going to go to school. We basically feel like we're being pushed out. I mean, I remember Art Murmur when it began, RPS, Mama Buzz Cafe, Auto Art Gallery. All of those people are gone. It's just gone. The city I know is gone.
Wow. Well, thank you, Sarah. Laura Flynn, our producer, says she loves Pretty Penny, and thank you for what you do and what you provide to the community. Hiroko, so many passionate people, everybody's got a story, and nobody's immune from what we're dealing with right now.
Well, I want to say quickly that, Oakland has only 3% of its land, and there's a lot of land here in Oakland that's designated as industrial use or light industrial. And so workspaces is a really key issue here for artists. But it does come down to housing. And then I also want to just, since we're speaking about housing, that it's really not just artists. I mean, there are artists that have low incomes, for sure, but it's really anyone who can't afford or has a $125,000 or $150,000 income to be able to afford the new rent here.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a good point. Nobody's immune from this. I mean, people across the board are being kicked out or are being threatened with letters. We've got a number of emails just about the role that cities can play. And April says, I'm an artist who's been living in San Francisco for 35 years and am dismayed at how little our city government has done to support artists. Why can't we do something like Santa Cruz did many years ago? They took an old tannery and built affordable artists live workspaces. I understand it's challenging with real estate prices, but this crisis has been going on for a long time. Elvin writes, while seeing the tsunami coming, and we did see it coming, we responded with studies and surveys. I read recently the San Francisco Art Commission just got an NEA grant to study artist affordable housing. More studies. San Francisco lacks arts leadership to move past the sleep-inducing, disempowering, endless studying and move to action. We know what to do and how to do it because other cities have been doing it for years, but we simply do not. We've got a lot of suggestions. Sean says, I sent the following suggestions to the mayor and the board of supervisors 10 years ago, and Tom Amiano was the only one that acknowledged my email. Sean says, how about creating an artist incubator in each district? This would be a self-sustaining nonprofit with housing and studios above and mixed use on the ground. The city could use 10% of the hotel tax every year to buy and build out a building in each district. Well, thank you for those messages. We actually have a caller who wanted to talk about giving artists more affordable workspace. Can we go to P. Siegel? Hi, thanks for calling in.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm a writer. I live in San Francisco. I was born and raised here. And I was part of an immensely vital artistic community here. We planned Burning Man in my living room.
Oh, wow.
25 years ago.
That's great. How that has changed.
Yes. I had a 4,800 square foot flat in the Western Addition, and I filled it with artists. And little by little, all those people have moved away. Most of my friends don't live here anymore. So about 2 years ago, I started thinking about solutions, what we could do. And, through discussions with people I knew who were real estate professionals, I said, what about nonprofit housing? I mean, could we take advantage of the fact that there are a lot of people in the Bay Area now who are, tremendously in need of huge tax write-offs? We know that people buy buildings and leave them empty to show a loss on their taxes. So, would they get the same loss if they bought a building and leased it to a nonprofit for artists' housing? And I think housing is crucial because we have workspaces, we have performing arts spaces, we have all those things, but if the artists can't afford to pay the rents here, what good are they?
Right.
So,
P. Siegel, we're almost out of time, so if you can talk about this nonprofit that was started.
Yes, I filed for nonprofit status. It's called Bohemia Redux, and our website, bohemiaredux.org, where I talk about the concept and also about why artists are such an important part of the social fabric, not just the arts, but the people who make art.
Right.
So anyone who would like to look at that site will get a lot of insight into what I'm thinking and how I plan to make this work.
Okay, well, thank you for calling in, and we'll put that information on our website, yourcallradio.org. We have some more actions that we all can take. Let's hear from Sharon in San Francisco. Hi, Sharon. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Hi, Moy. How are you?
Hi, Sharon.
Thanks, Rose, for doing this. A couple quick things. There are some great ideas that people have called in, and everybody's trying things separately. It's really hard to get artists together, as everybody says, we're like herding cats. So I want to encourage everybody who has great ideas and who wants to actually be effective and to pull together resources and to get stuff done to join with the Cultural Space Coalition at facebook.com/culturalspacecoalition or culturalspacecoalition@gmail.com. We're sitting down with supervisors. We're brainstorming to see how we can enlist tech. We're writing, we're doing actions. There's 10 days of actions being planned by the Cultural Action Network. We get out all the information. We have petitions to sign. We have hearings to show up. I heard P. Seagal, and she's doing great stuff and look forward to working with her, but she said we have workspaces. We don't have workspaces. We've left hundreds of workspaces in the last year. The performance spaces are collapsing, the rehearsal spaces are collapsing. It's not just visual arts, it's all the arts. Moy is doing great stuff, and she has to speak well of City Hall, but giving tax breaks to big business is not the way for us to keep a vibrant living city. I just wanted to say that if cities in general are going to maintain themselves as vibrant living places, we need to start prioritizing, investing, and subsidizing our cultural diversity and our cultural space.
Hey, Sharon, just quickly, we're almost out of time. There's so much new money now coming to the Bay Area. Are these people, these tech companies, are they contributing to arts organizations? Do we know?
Well, they like to spend money on dead artists' work to put in their lobbies and make them look like they're supporting the arts. But so far, we haven't brokered those relationships strongly enough. I think that they can be enticed to reverse the over-gentrification, become part of this living city. I'm an artist who works in digital art since 1983, so I'm not anti-tech. But I'm saying that selling the city off to the highest bidder is not going to preserve this as one of the beacons of the world. We're a cultural, creative city. And the mayor and our supervisors and the legislators on all levels have to start deciding that money isn't the only factor that determines who gets to decide what that neighborhood's going to be. And we're losing our, you know, our cultural diversity. We have the lowest proportion of African Americans of any major city. This is, have to change it around. It can't just be a Wall Street with views.
Well, thank you, Sharon. We only have a couple minutes left. Isn't it interesting that the show about the arts has really turned into a show about affordable housing? Not surprisingly, but that's what this really comes down to.
Agreed.
Final thoughts, Moy?
First of all, thank you so much for having this conversation, which is so needed, and bringing to light, again, highlighting the need for affordable space, period, mm-hmm. and the importance of having affordable space to both live and work in the cities that we love, that we've chosen to be in.
To your point, Joanne Madonna, the executive director of ArtSpan, just wrote in. Thank you, Joanne. She wanted to let people know about they partnered with a local progressive developer, Build yes. Inc., to take over 600 square feet of office space, and they turned them into short-term artist studios. They've got 21 artists there so far. So thank you for that email. And Hiroka, just about a minute left. Final thoughts from you?
Okay. Well, we are right now looking at capital, the development impact fees for developers coming in. The city of Oakland is going to be looking at what are the policies that require developers to contribute to affordable housing development here. We have no inclusionary zoning. The city of Berkeley requires $28,000 per unit for contributions, that is, for every unit that's built, $28,000 is set aside to affordable housing. By March, the city council will vote on what those requirements are going to be for developers. So I think it's very important to pay attention to that. I think also that if we are going to try to shape, how the city is going to, retain whatever authenticity we have here and keeping Oakland open, we actually do need to take a grassroots approach and get everybody involved. I know there's a focus on downtown right now, but that's where all the money is coming in. Mm-hmm. And so on February 1st, on Monday at 6 p.m. at the Malanga Tascalard Center for the Arts, which is at 1428 Alice Street, there will be another discussion on the downtown plan that's looking at alternatives.
All right, and we will link to that event on February 1st. Hiroka Kurihara is a textile artist who has lived in Oakland for 17 years, and Moy Ang is executive director of the Community Arts Stabilization Trust. They purchase and lease space for the exclusive use of nonprofit arts organizations. Hiroka and Moy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of California Governor Jerry Brown's State of the State address and his 2016 budget proposal. We often hear that California is in the middle of an economic boom, but what about the 9 million people who live in poverty? Who's reporting on the social and economic issues facing marginalized communities? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.